on 1070 WIBC. Dave Wilson. And Donald Davidson back again.
It doesn't seem possible. How can this be?
It's a beautiful thing. The 90th running, greatest race in the world.
I'm an immigrant. I came to work today. Hey.
But you came. That's right. I forgot. Thank you very much for crossing the picket line.
No, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. It's the least I could do. Well, it's not the least I could do.
That's
a great line. I remember Jay Leno picked up on that one time. He said, you know, when somebody says, well, it's the least you could do. No, it isn't.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot less we could do.
There's a lot less we could do.
Yes, there is. Let's get to your phone calls. We've got folks hanging on, 239-1070, 1-800-571-WIBC. Cameron, you're kicking off 2006 with Donald.
Hey, great to hear. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, my question for Donald is the golden wings and the flying tire that represents the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yes.
Where did that come from? I mean, as you look through the old memorabilia, it seems like it predates USAC and such.
Oh, it predates USAC by about, 50 years.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes back to the very beginning. And, the Speedway does not have a balloon program from June 5th, 1909, but I know a gentleman that has a copy. So, I mean, I've seen a private copy. And the logo, not too dissimilar from what it is now, is on the balloon program. So that goes back to the very beginning.
Oh, wow.
And but there have been a couple of claims that it had already appeared somewhere else, which has never been, just like the Chevrolet logo apparently came from a design in a hotel room in Paris. Supposedly.
Right.
But anyway, the wing and wheel, as I say, there's been a couple of claims that that Carl Fisher or whoever it was had seen it somewhere else, but that's never been... I'd like to know more about that, but they did have it in 09, and okay. It was because they wanted it to be... It was going to have an aviation presence as well as automobiles, which it did for a short time.
Well, yeah, Joe might know why it's on the side of the Ohio State police cars, maybe, then.
Oh, well, he's not down here. He has left the building.
Oh, he's already left the building.
Yeah, but we'll try to find out, Cameron. Thanks.
Well, no, great question. Thank you very much. We'll see you at the track.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Bye.
Uh-huh. Let's continue on at 6:15. Barry, you're up with Donald Davidson.
Hey, isn't it great to be living in Indianapolis during the month of May?
Yes, it is.
Yes. I've got a couple things about Pat O'Connor.
Okay.
Over the winter, I read a book about a notable driver, and in this book, it mentioned that he was lined up to be president of the Speedway. Have you ever heard anything of that nature?
I had not, but I wouldn't be surprised that... I mean, I don't know how far along that was, but apparently Tony Holman, although he had served as the president... Since Wilbur Shaw was lost in a plane crash, whether he was going to be named president or not, I don't know. But apparently, he did want to have Pat O'Connor involved with the track. On the other hand, Pat O'Connor had had entered the insurance business, and Wayne Fewson, in the days following the 58 race, Wayne Fewson wrote that he had talked to Pat O'Connor on race morning, and the indication was that he probably was only going to be running the 500 from that point on. But, you know, other people have made that statement. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Pat O'Connor's widow was still around, and I'll ask her that question.
Great.
But,
a brief rundown of his career at Speedway?
Sure. How long have we got here?
We have about a minute and a half.
Oh, all right, then. Well, at the Speedway, it was 21st and 54, 8th and 55, 18th and 56, 8th and 57, 29th and 58.
Wow.
But he was on the pole in 57 with the Sumar Special and did finish 8th. Ray Nichols was the mechanic. In 55, he looked like he was going to finish 2nd to Bob Swikert, his great friendly rival on the sprint car circuit. And... with 8 laps to go, driving a locally owned car, the Anstead Rotary Special owned by Bill Anstead, and had to come in with a fuel feed problem. They had a line blocked, and they managed to get that blown out, and he did get out and finish eighth. And so if you look at Pat O'Connor's finish at Indianapolis, it doesn't reflect his skills and his success at other tracks. He was a three-time sprint Midwest sprint car champion, and he won championship races. And the 500 was something that, you know, he looked like a potential winner several years, extremely popular, member of Hoosier Auto Racing Fan Club, and had a massive following. In fact, he lost his life in the 58 race in the first lap accident, and apparently a large number of people left in the minutes following the announcement being made. And I've had other people tell me that they never went back after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Barry, thank you for your phone call, sir. We appreciate it. 618, that's headed to the news center. 625 on 1070 WIBC. Donald Davidson to talk at Gasoline Alley. Let's get back to your phone calls. Vicki, you're up with Donald.
Yes, I'd like to know the chief mechanic that has the most wins at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That's George Bignotti with seven.
Seven? And who were they? Of course, Voight was some of them.
Two of them. 61 and 64 were Voight. And then Graham Hill in 66. Al Unser Sr., 70 and 71. And then Tom Sneva in 83. Oh, and John Cock. Gordon Johncock in 73. And then Sneva in 83.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki.
Thanks
we appreciate
call.
It. Let's continue on, and we will speak with David. Thanks for hanging on, David. You're up with Donald Davidson.
Donald, thank you very much for all you do for this radio station. When was the last time a one-off car was run in the 500?
A one-off meaning where the...
It didn't have a spec chassis or a spec engine.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant like a Marty Roth type of operation where they just run the one race.
No.
Golly... well, I have to go back away. The Primus in 84 is the last one that jumps to mind that was a car that was built of which there was only one. In more recent years, when you had everybody was running a Dallara or a G-Force, there were a few Riley and Scotts, but I wouldn't consider right. that a one-off.
What was that car that Ray Hall drove with the...
Drew Sports. I suppose that was a home built True Sports, which was designed by Don Halliday.
And was a Galmer in 92?
Oh, that's another good one. Yeah.
Do you think they're ever going to go back to that?
Not in the foreseeable future. I mean, not in the immediate future, but eventually, you know, you may see all kinds of changes. I don't know. That would be fine with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Galmer's a good one because they learned, I think, on the morning of the 92 race that they were going to scrap the program. It had won. They finished first and second at Long Beach, and it was considered a failure.
Yeah.
And then they won the 500, and then Sullivan was fifth in the other one, and I think everybody was kind of stunned. And the designer was not Alan Jenkins. I can't think of the designer's name now. Oh, Alan Mertens. Alan Mertens.
And then some of the Penske's would be considered probably.
Oh.
Would they be considered one-offs? But they were.
He
made those for other people, kind of.
Well, not new ones. They sold
right.
hand-me-downs.
Tony Benton has an oil.
But, I mean, I think what he's referring to is like a Bill Findlay or a Grant King or something like that. So, probably you'd have to go back to the Primus in 84, although that True Sports Chevy is certainly worthy of consideration. In a few years to come, who knows what's going to happen in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. David, thanks for your phone call. We appreciate it. 628. If you're on the line, stay there. We'll come right back. More lines are open at 239-1070. Talk of Gasoline Alley continues after. All right, Joe, thanks a lot. 634. Talk at Gasoline Alley, Donald Davidson, the initial show of 2006. Let's get back to your phone calls, and we'll go with Ryan here. You're on WIBC, Ryan.
Hey, how we doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'd just like to say hi to all my track forum buddies first. I'd like to say hey to them.
I had a question about the C plus S Motorsports entry for this year's Indianapolis 500, Donald.
Okay.
It seems that if it's a remainder of the equipment from the Newman Haas crew from last year.
I just read that, yes.
Okay. What do you think will materialize from this, and who do you believe the driver will be?
Oh, it will materialize if they get money. They're doing it, I think, on spec. And I hadn't even heard a rumor about a driver. Apparently, they do have the equipment. I've just, you know, read what you have. I don't even remember who the C is. The S is Mark Schellenberger, who actually was talking with another team. So I don't know how long this was in the works. But I haven't even heard any rumors. In fact, I was saying to Dave coming in here, there's no rumors about driver. I only know of one driver car combination that hasn't been announced yet, which is fairly straightforward because I won't say it, but it happened last year, and it's just been renewed. But I haven't heard a driver in connection with that one.
Okay.
But it's all about money.
Yeah.
Ryan, thanks for your call, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
You're
all right,
welcome.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Let's continue on. We'll pull up Curtis here. You're on WIBC, sir.
Hey, guys. It's been a long 11 months, so I love the month of May.
Yeah.
Hey, just a quick follow-up. You were talking about one-offs, and it got me to thinking in the early 90s, maybe around 93, 94, wasn't there a guy like with last name Greenfield that was building his own engines?
Yes, he built his own engines. What was his name? Michael Greenfield. He was the driver, but the father... I can't think of his name. In fact, they had an engine. They did a sponsorship thing with Tony Bettenhausen in '89, and then he came back with an engine in '94. '94, that was the same principle as the Ilmor pushrod engine that carried Mercedes Benz on it.
Okay.
Peter Greenfield was his name.
And did they ever qualify with their own engine?
No. Okay. They only ran it the once, and in fact, it never went to the qualifying line.
Okay. I guess I just saw them running in practice then.
And I don't remember that it was a pre-existing chassis. They didn't build their own stuff. It was just the engine.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate the info.
Thanks, Curtis.
Uh-huh. Thanks, guys.
Uh-huh. Let's continue on. We'll speak with Brett. You're up on WIBC, Brett.
Yeah, I was wondering if they're ever going to change the pace car to something different than a Corvette, since Chevrolet's never, motors are not in the race. Like a Honda or a Toyota pace car or something?
Every pace car they've ever had was American. And okay. The pace car has no bearing. In fact, it wasn't until 97 with the Aurora engine, and they had an Oldsmobile pace car. That's the first time the pace car has never had anything to do with the engines in the race. Never. In 56, you had 32 Offenhauses and one Novi, and a DeSoto was the pace car. I mean, it's become more of a marketing thing in recent years, but it would have no bearing on the engines in the race. Well, I said that. Obviously, there was a tie-in with Oldsmobile when they were in it, but it would not be Honda in the foreseeable future. To this point, it has always been American. And, in fact, there was a big stink in 1991 when it was going to be the Dodge Stealth, and the UAW just threw a fit, and the Speedway's... posture was, and rightly so, they said, we made the deal with Dodge, and it's up to them what they bring, because the Stealth was a Mitsubishi. And however, Dodge did rethink it, and the Viper became the pace car, and the Viper was practically a prototype, because it wasn't available to the public yet.
Right.
And so they had the one at the track. I'm off on a tangent now already, but they had the only one that there was. And then normally there's a bunch of pace cars at the track. And I remember the 2 or 3 days before the race, the second Viper arrived. But that's the only one that's even been close to a foreign car so far. Hey. For the future, who can say?
Yeah. Brett, thanks for your phone calls. We appreciate it. 6:39. And let's pause right here. If you'll stay on the line, Bill, you just wait right there. We'll come back with you and then more calls for Donald Reddit. 6:43, Talk of Gas Finale with Donald Davidson. Donaldson, you had a...
A little Viper story.
Yeah.
In 1996, the Homer George family owned Channel 23 at that time, and Vince Walsh and I would do a program. Every day, lunchtime, anyway, we were going to do a post-race show, and we were going to be on the racetrack, but it was raining. The race completed, but then it rained. So we're underneath the old Master Control Tower, and we're sitting there with Buddy Lazier and Ron Himmelgarn, and maybe a couple of other people only, and we took a commercial break, and Buddy just sat back, and he looked up at the ceiling. He said, "I still can't believe it. I can't believe it." And he says to Himmelgarn, he said, "You know what? I'm going to get one of those Vipers," because that was the pace car that year.
Yeah.
And he'd seen it around. And he says, "What do you mean?" He said, "I'm going to buy one of those." And he said, "But you get one." And he said, "Oh." The Himmelgarn said, "The winner gets a pace car." And he said, "That's right." And it was just this very special moment. That just the two of them, and we were privileged to be there. And just the look on his face. Oh, it was just dawning on him. That's right. The winner gets a face care.
Yeah. Very cool. Let's continue on. And, Bill, you're on WIBC with Donald Davidson.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is about six-wheeled cars, mostly, I think, in the 50s.
There was only one at Indianapolis.
Okay.
And that was the Pat Clancy Special, which ran in 48 and 49.
Oh, that late. Okay.
Yes. And then it ran. The car was there in 50, but it was a four-wheeler by that time.
Oh.
Billy DeVore drove it, and the tandem wheels were in the back. I've had several people ask about six-wheelers with the four in the front. That was the Tyrrell P34, I think, that ran in Formula One in 76 and 77. I'm sorry, 76 and 77, I believe is right. But anyway, the only one ever at Indianapolis was the Pat Clancy Special, which Billy DeVore finished. Actually, it qualified both years. Billy DeVore was 12th in 48, and then Jackie Holmes drove it in 49 and had a transmission problem at like 70 laps.
And what chassis was that?
They built their own.
Oh, they did?
Yes. I can't remember the name of it. It was A.J. Bowen was the chief mechanic. And it was a home built.
Okay.
Back in the days when there was a lot of home builds.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thank you.
A.J. Watson built a replica, which they've run on the Vintage Car Day for the last 2-3 years. But that's a built from the ground up replica.
239-1070, if you have a thought or a comment of a historic nature for Donald Davidson. If Marco Andretti makes the starting field for this race, will this be the first third generation? Of three continuous?
No, Vukovic.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right. I forgot about them. Man,
but that's the only one so far.
That'd just be the second one.
Yes.
That's pretty impressive.
And also the fact that it's not only is it the grandson of a former driver, but in the Vukovic case and in the Andretti case, there's no missing link. It's the three.
Right.
The first, this is a little heavy trivia. The first grandson of a former driver ever entered was a Belgian named Teddy Pellat in 1977. There was a team owned by Art and Midori Sugai, and the drivers were Rick Mears, who missed the show with an eagle offie. That was his rookie year. And he had the long hair and the floppy hat. And then Teddy Pellat was a Belgian whose grandfather, Theodore Pellat, drove in the 1913 race and finished fifth. And then the son/father, Andre Pellat, was a delightful man who drove in a few Grand Prix events in the 50s and shared the car that finished second at Le Mans in 1960.
That's Donald Davidson. We'll come back with your phone call, so stay tuned for that. It is 6:48. Let's head up to the WIBC News Center. Back here with Donald Davidson. Let's get back to your phone calls. And we'll speak with Mark. You're up with Donald Davidson, sir.
Yes, I'd like to ask about Pat Vedan, the starter, how many years he was at the track, and when was the last time a starter was actually on the track itself?
Okay, well, that would be Pat. 1962 through 79 was his tenure. I think 58 was the first year he was at the track. He was an assistant starter. to Bill Vanderwater, who flagged from the track. And I'm not sure, well, during qualifications, Pat would stand on the track, and he really wanted to be there on race day as well. And they had a little platform, and probably Harlan Fengler insisted on that. There was a green wooden platform on the grass verge next to the pit wall, which was a lot, it wasn't as high as it is now. And that platform probably couldn't have been maybe 8-9 inches off the ground. And so they would stand on that, and he would flag. So he was virtually at track level. But then in 1974, when Tom Binford became chief steward, one of the first things he asked for was to be up high on the outside. And I think whether that was because he thought they were a little too vulnerable down on the track there from angry chief mechanics or people that wanted to protest. But anyway, when they went up, that actually restricted Pat's flair for showmanship quite a bit. He didn't like it up there, I do know that. But so probably actually when he would be on the track flagging in qualifications was probably late 60s, I would think.
Mark, thanks for like Kirby, Jerry, Steve, give us a call back tomorrow night. We'll be back again with the Talk of Gas finale every night through the month of May.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Donald. We'll be back. Steve's up next.